Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why the idea of privilege can stop a conversation about race dead in its tracks. I think as a straight, middle-class, white woman, it's probably one of the most uncomfortable but necessary realities for me to accept. Do you also find yourself shying away from the truth of privilege? My guest nails it when she explains why in her new book. Ijeoma Oluo writes, "The concept of privilege violates everything we've been told about fairness and everything we've been told about the American dream of hard work paying off and good things happening to good people." Right, that's it. But understanding and accepting the reality of our own privilege in all its forms, without shame, is essential to being open to an honest discussion about race and equity. So today, as Ms. Oluo joins us, I think we'd like to hear from you. What's your understanding of your own privilege? How much thought have you given to the way it influences your political perceptions and your conversations about race? So I guess what I'm doing right now is saying, check your own privilege in this conversation. Take a minute and do that. Talk to me about it today. And then have you thought about how it influences the way you think about politics, the conversations that you're having about race and equity? Love to hear your thoughts on this morning. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Ijeoma Oluo is an academic. She writes and speaks widely on race, and her new book is titled So You Want to Talk About Race. It's my thread must read of the week, and she's joining us today from Seattle. And Ijeoma, welcome. It's really good to have you on the show. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me.
And I know you have to leave a little bit early, so we will get in as many calls as we can, and we'll have a fast conversation, okay?
Looking forward to it.
You acknowledge that part of the reason that people would rather skip right over the discussion about privilege is because there's a lot of derision and there's a lot of shaming that goes on that seems to accompany those parts of the conversation. And you and I know, nobody steps up willingly to be shamed. How do we get that out of these discussions about privilege?
You know, I think it's really important to remember that, A, even if you do feel a little bad at first recognizing your privilege, you will still be here. That feeling will fade. And then you need to recognize the opportunity inherent in recognizing your privilege. I think a lot of times we don't get past that first thought of, what do you mean? Does this mean, you know, that I'm a horrible person? And then you don't get to the actual opportunity. I think it's also really important to remember that privilege exists in very many different facets in our life. And so it doesn't mean that because you're privileged in one aspect that you haven't been underprivileged in another. It doesn't erase the hardships you've faced. It's simply a set of advantages that you may have in a different area.
Okay, a lot to talk about there, and I don't want to miss what you said about opportunity, because that's the flip side of, I feel bad about this, I'm going to do anything I can to avoid talking about. Where are the opportunities in this?
I like to think of privilege as a room that you're in that other people are not in.
Mm-hmm.
So privilege comes with power. And with that power means you actually have an opportunity to make change. If you do nothing with your privilege, then it will continue to prioritize you in that aspect over other people. But if you decide, I have this power, I'm in this room, I can actually make a difference for those people who can't be in this room because they don't have the privilege, then what you're really doing is making a difference that can't be made by someone else.
Now, let me grab some calls here to Via in St. Paul. Hi, so glad you called in. What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking about a community series I took on white privilege, and what was really eye-opening for me was they asked a question. They said, okay, how often do you talk about race in your home? Is it a daily conversation, weekly, monthly? And I thought about that. I thought, you know, we really don't. I was brought up to say, oh, don't talk about race. Everyone's the same. We don't want to identify differences. And one thing that they said that was amazing is if you don't talk about race in your home, and another thing that they had cited was that many families of color talk about race on a daily basis. They said, being a white person, if you don't talk about race in your home, you're not going to give your kids the language to talk about race, to be able to, when they see it, be able to talk to it and counteract the institutionalized white privilege.
Good,
and I just that was interesting.
It's good. It's a good point. Ijeoma, what do you hear in that?
You know, I hear a lot of truth in that, and I've had similar conversations. I actually had a conversation with an associate a few months ago. We were talking about what it's like for me as a parent of two young boys to talk to my kids about things like staying safe around police and how to interpret the news of, you know, all of these police shootings. And this person said to me, "I'm so glad I don't have to talk to my daughter about this." And I said, "Well, why don't you have to talk to your daughter about this?" And he was like, "Wait, what?" And I said, "Well, your daughter's in community with my son. If this is something my son's concerned about, he's carrying this burden every day. Why wouldn't your daughter need to know that this is what her friends and her classmates are going through? She needs to be concerned now, and she needs to be helping and supporting her friends that are going through this. You should not exempt your children from something that is impacting their community."
I was thinking that part of what I think is uncomfortable in these conversations about privilege is it's this idea that some of this privilege is completely unearned, right? And this gets back to what you were writing about the American dream and that quote that I used in the introduction. Like, I had nothing to do with the fact that I was born to parents who could afford to pay my way through college. That's a ton of advantage right there. I had nothing to do with that, and yet I've been able to reap the advantages of that. Some of this is the unearned, "I had nothing to do with this," isn't it?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, kind of goes against everything you've been taught, right? You know,
right,
that you have the right to feel proud of every achievement you have 100%. And I don't think it means that you shouldn't be proud of what you've accomplished. But I do think it means that you need to balance that with wondering, who would this have not been so easy for? Who would have had to work harder? Who was barred from even entering this room? And then say, since I am here, since I have been able to accomplish this, I have a duty now to help those who would not have been able to get this far.
So talk to me about this in real time. You get into you're willing to step into one of these uncomfortable conversations about race, and privilege comes up. What are some of the things that you're saying and thinking about that show that you're willing to be open about the idea of your own privilege? I guess I'm asking to role play this out a little bit, Ijeoma. Is that okay?
Certainly. I would say, no matter what, it's really important to start with yourself. You know, I think it's really easy to, there's an instinct to push outward and say, "Oh, let me focus on someone else's privilege." But always start with yourself. You only have control over yourself. And start asking, what could I not be seeing? And asking questions. Don't just assume that you know. And I always, you know, kind of start with, I'm assuming I have this privilege. And because I have a certain level of privilege, you know, I'm able-bodied, I have pretty good mental health, I'm now middle class, I'm college educated. These are all things that mean that there are areas of life experience that I have not lived and I do not see, and there are hurdles I don't see. And so I start by asking questions. I state that I'm aware of these things, but it doesn't mean I know everything. A lot of times people think, "Oh, I've stated my privilege, I've done the work." What that means is, I've stated my privilege, I'm ready to start listening. And it's, you know, I'm aware I may well be missing something. And I try to come with the assumption that if I am talking with someone who is underprivileged in an area I am not, that if there is a miscommunication, that there's a very likely chance that that falls on the side of me not having that lived experience. I don't automatically assume they're wrong. And I think that that's really important when you're entering into conversations, to remember that there's a piece of the puzzle you may not have because of your privilege.
It's a really good way to think about the piece of the puzzle. Go ahead. I interrupted you. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, you know, I think that that's where oftentimes we lose the thread in these conversations. People will say they recognize their privilege, but they think that because they've recognized it, that means they see the whole picture. But really, what you recognize is that there are things you don't recognize. So that's really what you're saying.
A call here from Morgan May in Minneapolis. Hi, good morning. Glad you called.
Hi, I'm a white person who grew up below the poverty line, mainly in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. And conversations about privilege make me realize that I benefited a lot from the support network that my family provided and friends around us provided. We had things like we always had access to transportation because we would get cars as hand-me-downs. I would get clothing as hand-me-downs. And we always had a place to stay. Whenever there was a risk of someone in our family being homeless, someone would take them in.
So I think this is really, I'm really glad you called. I think this is super valuable to where we are, Ijeoma, in the conversation, because some people may say, well, I grew up, as Morgan May says, below the poverty line. So I wasn't privileged. I'm in this conversation as a completely unprivileged person. No, not necessarily. And you hear how she's evaluating her own advantages.
Yes, definitely. And I would say privilege is situational. And I think it's important to remember that. Like, once you have the label of privilege, that doesn't mean that everything in your life is easier. It just means that without that privilege, there are certain things that would have been more difficult, right? So this caller is underprivileged in the fact that she grew up below the poverty line, right? And that means that certain things in her life were more difficult than for people who grew up middle class. Now, if she had been Black on top of that, would have been even more difficult. Mm-hmm. And then there are Black people who may have grown up middle class, and that meant that in areas of, say, finance, their life may have been a little bit easier. Now, when they're interacting in a traffic stop, that privilege swings the other way. Mm-hmm. And it's situational depending on where you are.
Call here from Jamie in Minneapolis. Hi, Jamie.
Oh, hey, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for having this conversation, and I look forward to the author's book. I just wanted to inquire about, really, when I hear the word privilege, is the roots of that word are a right in law, in some sort of law or right. And she also used the word, it's really a series of advantages. And I think the word advantage really enhances understanding, and it helps me to understand the advantages and disadvantages that I have. And the more I meet other people to understand them in a better way. I'm not sure that the word privilege, I think that it's too polarizing.
Yep.
And it's really not illuminating as to, I just think about my personal experiences. I grew up in a negative worth household at first, that later became fairly wealthy. As an adult, I started out in the working world from a negative position, and ended up fairly comfortable. And I realized the advantages that I have and also the advantages I've wasted.
Mm-hmm.
And then my colleagues, what disadvantages they had and what advantages they also had. And they took advantage of even more or even wasted. But I like the word advantage more because I think it's a little less polarizing. But thank you for this conversation. And
yeah.
I appreciate it.
I find Jamie's argument compelling. Ijeoma, do you?
I do. I think that, you know, we have kind of been in error since the beginning of discussing privilege, of not sitting down and kind of having a thorough discussion. But one thing I will say is no matter what, this is going to be an uncomfortable conversation for people, right? Because we are talking about advantages or disadvantages that people may or may not have had control over having and yet can negatively impact the lives of people around them. And so I think that no matter how we defined it, we would probably find ourselves in the same situation, because what happens is when people start to feel bad about something, they don't want to talk about it. And I could easily see advantaged or disadvantaged becoming a word just as maligned as privilege in our discourse. It's not because perhaps the word isn't the best fit. It's because of how it makes people feel when they start to delve into these conversations.
Ijeoma Oluwo is with us this morning, and we're talking about her new book, So You Want to Talk About Race. We've done a lot of talking about race on this show, and I think some of those most uncomfortable moments are when privilege enters the discussion. So I pulled this chapter out of Ijeoma's book, and I'm welcoming you into the discussion to understand how this idea of checking your privilege plays in our conversations about race, why so many people feel uncomfortable in talking about it. I think we've covered some of that. And then asking you this morning about how deep and broad your understanding of your own privilege or advantages goes, how much thought have you given to the way, and I think this is an important part of this, how much thought have you given to the way it influences what you think about politics, the candidates you support, how you see these discussions, these national, polarizing often discussions about race and equality. So is your advantage, your privilege, influencing the way you enter in one of those conversations, the decisions you make politically? I'm going to ask Ijeoma about that, but I want to hear from you as well. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR. Before I take another call, Ijeoma, I'd love to have your thought on that. I think that many of us think our political decisions are very rational and they're based on policy and those kinds of things, when we really know, and research tells us, they're deeply emotional. How could it be that they're not influenced by the way we see our own advantage or privilege or don't? What's your thought?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we determine our priorities and what we think is important for society based on what we think would help us and our families the most. And we tend to think that people, you know, that phrase, people have more in common than they don't have in common. But what we forget is the differences are actually very important as well. And oftentimes that will make or break someone's well-being in society. So when we think our top priorities are, it's based on where we are in society and what we would need to feel safe and secure. So your privilege will stop you from seeing what other segments of your society need. And that means you're going to follow politicians and vote for bills that meet your needs. And it doesn't mean that you're trying to be selfish. It means that, you know, your worldview of what you think other people would need is going to be colored by what you think you need.
Well said. That's what I was trying to get at right there. To Theo in Minneapolis. Hi, Theo.
Hey, Carrie. How you doing?
Glad to have you calling. What are you thinking about?
Yeah. So I'm a black man from Minneapolis, and what I want to say is I'm glad you're having this conversation, because when we talk about racism, what we're really talking about is a system of unbalanced power, and navigating systems of unbalanced power is always difficult. But up until now or recently, all of that work has been done by the people who are suffering, right, by black people. And so when we have these conversations, what black people are doing is we're asking white people to share in this difficulty of working through this imbalance of power.
And feeling uncomfortable, okay, about the unbalanced power and the fact that you have advantage and privilege in that unbalance, right?
Totally. Because, like, racism always made people uncomfortable. Like, as a black person, racism makes me very uncomfortable. And to have white people joining in that discomfort is actually nice, because now it's like, okay, now we can start to work, as opposed to me just being the only one that's uncomfortable.
Ijeoma, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm nodding my head over here vigorously. I fully understand. You know, it's really one of the greatest privileges as far as race is the ability to sit down and decide when and where you're going to address issues of race.
Yeah.
People of color really don't have that choice. It can be hitting you as you're walking down the street and someone shouts something out of a car, or when you're in a job interview. And I think it's really important to remember that when you decide, oh, it's not comfortable for me, I'm not going to take this on, you're basically placing that entire burden on people of color, who have far less power to do anything to actually disrupt that system. The people with the most power are the people deciding, I don't really feel like it today. It makes me feel bad. I'm not going to do it. But I don't get to say, I get a break from race today. I would love to. I would love a little vacation from it. But I think it's important for people to remember that.
Josh called from St. Mary's Point to essentially say what you've just said. Just having this conversation is in itself emblematic of how deeply ingrained our privilege is. We can just talk about this rather than experiencing it in our daily lives. It's just an occasional conversation for us. And to the phones, to Paul in Minneapolis. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hey, how are you thinking about it?
Well, look, I'm white and I'm college educated. And I get my privilege, at least to my awareness so far. Now, I work in a situation where my coworkers, by and large, are not college-educated, white, and they don't recognize their privilege. They say things like, oh, I've been working since I was 14.
Yes.
You know, and their jobs are, you know, working-class jobs, and they just don't get it.
And that's not to be ignored, right, Ijeoma? I mean, that is not to say, well, but all your other privilege overrides that. That's to be acknowledged, I would think.
Definitely. I think, you know, like I said, privilege is situational. So it's important to remember that it doesn't erase the other hardships people have had. And that's why I always say I like to start with myself, because when I can kind of disarm people and say, look, I'm recognizing here that, you know, I was born in a country that values education in women, right? That itself is a huge privilege. And I list my own and I try to be aware of that. And I look at it as an opportunity. And I think sometimes it's really important to just fast forward to that opportunity. And also, you know, looking at it as, it doesn't mean that everything was easy for you. It just means things would have been more difficult had you not had that privilege. So if you're a working class white person who has been, you know, working your butt off since you were 14, now imagine you had a name like Jamal Washington, which makes you, you know, 75% less likely to even be called for a job interview if you wanted to start working at 14. Right? And that's how I like to kind of frame it, because it doesn't necessarily mean that you didn't work hard. It does mean that things would have been even harder had you not had that privilege.
I just want to read a couple sentences that you write that may give some listeners perspective on how you come into this as an African-American woman. You say, as a light-skinned black woman, I'm viewed by many in society as more intelligent and less threatening than darker-skinned black people. So what you're saying is, I, through nothing I did, ended up being born with lighter skin, and our culture gives privilege as a result of that. And you're aware of it. Yes?
Yes. Yeah. And that means I have a responsibility as well. So that means that if I'm sitting in a panel and I look and I notice that everyone's light skin, which happens quite often, I have a duty then to decide, should I be in this panel? Should someone else be in my place? Should I be making a bit of a ruckus? Should I be pointing this out to the audience? You know, I have all these opportunities based on how people treat me when I'm speaking to recognize, would they treat someone who's darker skin the same way that they're treating me right now? And I have an extra duty to kind of speak up when I'm in spaces that other people can't be in and try to do what I can to pull other people into that room.
So let's put you back in that moment on that panel, and you look around the room and you realize that there have been decisions made about who's going to join this panel. Do you decide? I mean, what must go through your head is, I'm going to disrupt this. I'm going to make some people feel pretty uncomfortable here, but I'm going to point out the privilege in the room. Do you do it?
Yes.
You do.
Yes, I absolutely must. Otherwise, I'm just benefiting from the privilege at the expense of others. You know, especially too, because it's not fair to the audience. There is a lived experience for darker skinned black people that I don't have. And so when people are talking about issues like race in America, I can't act like I am giving a complete, you know, idea of what it's like to be black, because the worst of racial oppression in this society often falls on our darkest skinned brothers and sisters. So I can't sit there and say, you guys got what you paid for. And if it's something I can catch before I go, it's definitely something I try to rectify before we even hit the stage.
Call here from Jessica in St. Cloud. Hi, Jessica. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, no problem.
What are you thinking?
Well, actually, it's just interesting between when I called and just listening to the program. The author said about when you're in the room and you're recognizing a privilege that you feel a responsibility to speak up and point it out. And so the question earlier was that, how has your privilege or lack thereof influenced your politics or maybe how you approach national conversations? And I grew up rural Minnesota, very poor, moving around a lot, which is, you know, classic a life experience of people living in poverty. Mm-hmm. And through government programs, my family was able to stay afloat. We had food on the counter. I was able to get grants and stuff so I could go to college and eventually do what I think we all have the goal for our children to do, which is to climb out of poverty. And so now that I have done that, I do feel a deep responsibility politically to stand up, speak up, advocate for the programs that benefited me personally and took me from that place of disadvantage to advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is, I hate to call it a burden of privilege. It's a privilege of privilege to be able to look back, recognize that it took those programs. It took social networks, like a call said earlier, that she recognizes the privilege of having family. Where those things are absent, I feel as a former poor person and it's weird to say that, that I have a responsibility politically to be advocating at every turn for those programs that kept me afloat.
This makes, I like the way you connected this, Jessica. Your own experience, you have clarity around how it influences your politics, and you seem to have clarity, Ijeoma, weigh in here, on where your privilege rests now. I guess, Ijeoma, what I'm asking is for people to say, do I believe this because have I connected, I guess, my own life experience and my assumptions and my unchecked advantages with the way I feel politically? I don't know that there's enough of that going on.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, we're kind of trained in a representational government to say you're busy, right? You would like these people that seem like you. They do all the hard work. But what that ends up doing is you fall into this trap of you like someone, they seem to represent your needs, and then that's just privilege reinforcing privilege, mm-hmm. right? You're not looking outside and saying, wait, are they actually representing everyone? And I would say definitely that's where you start looking and saying and asking questions and doing the research. We live in a great age of the internet, which means you can really find out what's happening in other communities and people with other lived experiences around you. And your privilege means, too, that because you aren't currently fighting those specific issues, you'll have bandwidth in those areas to do that work. And it's a wonderful opportunity to actually find out places where you can make a measurable difference. You know, we talk about race a lot, like it's this huge monolith that we can't touch. We can't do anything about how bad racism is. You know, but racism lives in a system, and that's our everyday decisions, which means if you have the flexibility to go to a PTA meeting, and that's during the day when many families of color are working and can't get off work to attend, then you have a duty to show up at that meeting and say, how come we're not making these hours more flexible so that we have more representation of parents of color in this room, right? If you walk up 3 flights of stairs to get to a restaurant, you can talk to the manager and say, how come you don't have a lift or disabled access so that other people can get up here into this restaurant? These are rooms you're in that other people can't get in. And what that means is you are doing something day to day that's measurable, that has a real impact on deconstructing systems of oppression throughout our society. And there's so much power there. And so it ends up stops being a negative thing and ends up being really, really empowering because every day you have dozens of opportunities to make real change.
Kelsey in Luck, Wisconsin, called with something that I think some of our listeners are thinking about now. She says the conversation always centers around getting people to acknowledge privilege. I'm a white woman in my 30s. I've acknowledged my privilege. Okay, Kelsey, have you? And then she says, now what do I do? What's the next step? I talk about this with my kids, but what else can I do? So, yeah, I think a lot of our listeners are like, take me to the next step. I think we heard some of that in what you just said, Ijeoma, about being aware and advocating. What else?
Yeah, I would definitely say there's a couple of aspects to privilege. One, like I said, it's a room that other people aren't in, right? So you'll have an opportunity to speak out in places other people don't. You have an opportunity to be heard in ways that other people won't. If I'm sitting in an office meeting and people are constantly talking over people of color in that meeting, if I, as a Black woman, say something, I am oftentimes written off as an angry Black woman. But as a function of privilege, if a white person in the room were to say something, mm-hmm. they would not only be listened to, but less likely to suffer like penalization for speaking out. Right? These are the everyday opportunities where you can actually make change. And when you start listening and saying, what have I been missing out on? This is going to inform how you vote. Right. If you have no idea how the school to prison pipeline is impacting your local schools because your child isn't the target of it, then your voting decisions for your school board are going to be very different than for the parents who are concerned every day that their kid is not going to make it through the year. Right. These are different opportunities where you can look and say, even just how you're talking to friends, how you spend your money. That's a huge one. If you've never had to worry about how your kids are represented in books and movies and popular culture, then now's a good time to think and look at that privilege and say, gosh, if I were a Black parent and I wanted my child to see themselves as a superhero, mm-hmm. how hard would it be searching through my local bookstore to find a superhero that looks like my kid?
I really like this. You're talking about every day, some kind of special opportunity and then just some daily opportunities, right, to think about it. It's good.
Definitely. It's all a part of the system. I think what we forget is that the system is upheld by our culture, and we interact with our culture, and we interact with these little bits of the system, and it actually does make a difference. If your kids grow up used to seeing Black and brown and Asian people in all of their storybooks and in their history books, they're going to grow up expecting to see them in their House of Representatives and in their Senate, right? These are things that support each other, and we can change that narrative in little ways to make a really big impact.
Jamal tweeted, you'll find this interesting, I think, Ijeoma. He says, discussing race and privilege, a caller commented on working since they were 14 years old. The guest's response was, how about if your name was Jamal Washington and you never got the call for the job interview? And you're basing that on research about how a name that indicates race or ethnicity will diminish the opportunities, right, for work. And Jamal adds here on the tweet, I will add, or what if your name was Jamal Abdullahi? You are perceived to be a threat. And then he adds, but to the guest's point, I grew up in a family where obtaining education at any cost was a must, encouraged and expected to be excelled. So that's my privilege. Do you get what he's saying here, Ijeoma? He has a name, Jamal Abdullahi, so he's got disadvantages built in there. And yet he kind of turns around and says, and yet I did have this very powerful privilege.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm the daughter of a Nigerian immigrant who had a PhD and was a college professor. So growing up knowing that education was incredibly important is a definite privilege I had. It also meant, though, that there were times when professors kind of, you know, teachers doubted that maybe I was the person writing my essays, you know, and doing the work. Or if I started to get really intense in a debate where professors start looking like maybe I was going to start throwing punches and I'm just trying to talk about politics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but there was a definite distinct advantage that I had that other people don't have, right? I had friends who were growing up every day saying the best you're going to be able to hope for is a 9-to-5 if you're lucky. And that's what society had told them over and over again. Whereas I was told, you know, if you don't get a PhD, you're going to be, you know, a disappointment to the family, right? So these are the sorts of things that, you know, that's a different privilege. And that's when I acknowledge every day, because I didn't have to overcome that hurdle of being told every day that I wasn't going to accomplish my degree. You know, in fact, the fact that I only have a bachelor's kind of, you know, sits in the back of my brain. you can go back now, you know.
Oh my gosh, you get over it. You've written a fantastic book. Please, please savor the accomplishment of that. Okay, we have 1 minute before we have to let you go. So I'm going to grab a call here from Dean in Minneapolis. Dean, be quick so Ijeoma can hear what you're going to say.
Okay, sure. I guess my comment, first of all, thank you very much for this conversation. I guess my comment is, after becoming aware of one's privilege, it's still really hard to have a conversation about it with, you know, my peers and colleagues. And so I've tended to shy away. It is very uncomfortable, like you said earlier. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, the question is, how do you overcome that? You said something really important, which was talk about your own experience so I'll take that away from this conversation. But anything else that you might add to kind of help us to have those conversations?
Dean, I would recommend the book. But Ijeoma, please weigh in here before we have to let you go.
Sure. I would definitely say if you're someone who's doing the work to recognize your privilege and you work around that and you're frustrated because your, you know, friends and coworkers maybe are still really struggling with that, one thing that really helps is to start with what you're doing with your privilege and state that. People really like to feel like they're making a difference, and people kind of become motivated when they see, you know, there are times where I'll say, you know what, this issue bothered me. Something was said to my son and it seemed transphobic. But my son is not transgender. And so then I realized that as a parent who doesn't have to actually worry about this sort of abuse towards my kid, I had a duty to speak up. This is what I did. This is how it was responded to. Isn't this great? We're making a difference. And other people are like, oh, wait, I didn't, you know, I could do that too. And I think sometimes showing what you're doing with it kind of encourages people to feel like, hey, I could have had an opportunity today to do something really great with my privilege. And it starts from that positive.
Ijeoma, I wish you big book sales and very well. Thanks so much for the time today. Really good to have you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Ijeoma Oluo's book is called So You Want to Talk About Race. It was my thread must read this morning, so you can read a little bit more about it on the thread and find the conversation. If you got in late, you can find it on the podcast. Just search NPR News with Carrie Miller wherever you get your podcasts.